court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia.
I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. I am just a dude.
So for today's episode, we are going to discuss the differences between criminal law and civil law. This was a topic which was suggested by Christine O'Neill on our court-appointed Facebook page. She posted this topic as well as many others that will probably fuel our entire first season or first run of court-appointed. But they were all very good, so...
How come you get all the easy ones?
What do you mean?
Christine O'Neill. Anybody can pronounce that. I get ones like Scout looked like Grenier. I thought I was being sophisticated and said Grenier, and it ends up it's Grenier.
Yeah.
Who would have ever thought Grenier? Evidently, there was some Cajun blood mixed in there, and so that's why you pronounce that, Grenier.
But you have Cajun blood too, don't you?
I do have some Cajun blood.
Just not, maybe your tongue's not Cajun.
Well, no, I didn't. I didn't actually live down there. I just had relatives that came from there. My Uncle Billy lived down on the bayou, and he told some wild stories. We'd go crabbing off the back dock, and he told me, he said, "Now, one of them crabs get hold of you, boy. You got to wait for thunder to strike before he let go. So make sure you stay away from the business end of the crab."
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I stayed away from the business end.
What is the business end of the crab? Is that the claw, I guess?
Yeah, you got to hold them little flapper things on the back.
Is the business end of something like always like the dangerous part of it?
I was going to say so. The business end of a gun?
Yeah, I've always heard that expression, but I never actually...
You never heard of the business end of a crab?
No.
Well, now you know about it.
If I was thinking of the business end of an animal or a living being, I would think it might be kind of going in the other direction.
It's not that kind of business. I'm not doing that business.
Well, anyway, enough about crabs' butts.
Not enough about crabs. It's going to be hard for me to stay on topic this week.
That is true. We are getting ready to leave for...
The beach.
The beach next, tomorrow.
We are going vacationing. It's been a long, dry summer, and we're finally able to go, so...
Yeah, and Tommy has, as many of you know, his nickname is Low Country Tom, and he is very excited for the Low Country
Boil. We're going to the Low Country. We're going to have some Low Country Boil.
So he's going to be all about the business ends of some crabs.
Or some shrimps. Or some sausages or potatoes. Do sausages and potatoes have a business end?
Yeah, definitely. I think any end of a sausage is a business end.
They're going to beat my business end is what's going to happen. That's the end of that business when I get hold of it.
When Christine O'Neill suggested the difference between criminal law and civil law, I bet she didn't expect this episode to take off in this direction.
No, we didn't either when we started, did we?
That's true. Got Low Country on the brain. The difference between criminal law and civil law is pretty vast. In a lot of people's minds, they don't really understand what the difference is. They just think courtroom's a courtroom. But civil law and criminal law are totally different. They're governed by a completely different set of statutes. They actually even have different rules of procedure. There's criminal rules of procedure, and there's civil rules of procedure.
Do lawyers do one or the other?
Some specialize in one or the other, and some do both. It's not uncommon to see a lawyer who does civil and criminal. If you're doing civil litigation and you do like kind of insurance defense type work and things like that, then you're probably only doing civil. And if you are doing plaintiff's work, I think there might be a more likelihood that you might do both criminal defense and plaintiff's work, especially in this area where we are here. It seems to be the two things kind of go hand in hand.
Well, on TV, I've seen some lawyers that were not civil and they were criminals.
I don't know any lawyers that are not civil and criminals, so it's not good to speak ill of fellow lawyers, so I'm not going to.
I'm not a fellow lawyer. I am just a dude.
That's right. Is there a prohibition against you speaking ill against other dudes?
No, I don't think so. Dudes do that all the time.
dudes do that all the time. So, yeah, as I was saying, the difference between criminal law and civil law is quite
dudes
a bit.
Dudes do that. Is that what you said?
The difference is also is there's different jury instructions, and as I was alluding to, the different rules of procedure. So if, and basically by procedure, I mean like the way that the court proceeding takes place. When you have like a criminal law, then you're going to have like an arraignment, And you have to plead guilty or not guilty. And then you go to pretrial and you have some discovery as well and things like that. But that's kind of completely different than a civil case, because a civil case begins with the filing of a complaint, basically saying that you did something and you're asking the court to kind of right that wrong.
Okay, let me break this down into a layman's thing.
Sure.
To me, the main difference, if I understand this right, between a criminal case and a civil case, a criminal case, you can go to jail. You did something that you broke the law and you go to jail, whereas in a civil case, it's more about money. Somebody did something wrong and you're suing them for damages, or there's some type of liability issue, but it's not like something you go to jail for.
That's pretty much right. But there are also criminal trials and things like that that take place where it's not, there's not the threat of jail. It's just a fine. Like misdemeanors, a lot of times,
sure,
there might not be, you know, a jail sentence that goes with it, but it's still a criminal charge, like a reckless driving or something like that. I mean, you know, something like that, you might get a suspend your license or something like that.
So that's a criminal case.
Yeah, it'd be a criminal case.
However, if, say, it was reckless driving, if you caused someone else to have injuries, then it would probably, could turn into a civil case as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can have both things, and that's kind of where it gets a little bit confusing, I think, to a layperson, is that, well, why is this being litigated twice, or why are there two different cases? And the breakdown is because criminal law is a charge, is something that somebody has done, and it's basically against the law, and you're breaking the law of the state. And so that would be the state bringing the charge against you for doing that. And that's why you have court cases which are called like the state versus O.J. Simpson, or the state versus Low Country Tom, or whatever.
Versus Low Country Tom. Low Country Tom just wants to get his Low Country boil on. He ain't bothered nobody.
But so that's kind of one of the main differences, is that the state is actually bringing the charge in a criminal thing. That's when you have prosecuting attorneys, like some people call them district attorneys, state's attorneys, things like that. And they're bringing that on behalf of the people of whatever jurisdiction that they're representing. In a civil case, just a private practice attorney is going to be the one who brings that matter. Like if you come to me and say, hey, somebody was drunk and hit me the other night, then the state attorney is going to be the one who brings the DUI charge against that person. And then you would hire me basically to get monetary damages for the vehicular accident. And I would be the one who would represent you in that. And you could say, you know, hey, Mike, I got hit by this guy. Can you file a lawsuit against him? So I would file, let's call it a complaint, in civil court. And it'd be heard by two different judges. Usually, well, in some jurisdictions, it might be one judge if it's a real small place. Some judges wear different hats. But most of the country, you're going to have some judges who only do criminal, some judges who only do civil, and sometimes they rotate the benches, so different judges hear it, but usually for a certain period of time, that judge is only doing that one kind of law.
So they actually sit on a bench?
They do. Well,
and they wear them out after a while, so they got to rotate them around?
They sit behind the bench.
Behind the bench?
Yeah, behind the bench.
They're not even good enough to sit on the bench?
Well, they sit on the throne above, behind the bench.
Reminds me of like football. When I was in, played football, I was a guard, an end, and a tackle. I sat at the end of the bench, and I guarded the water bucket, and I tackled whoever came near it.
I know that's not true. I've seen you play football here. You're really good at football, so.
I know, but there's no jokes about that.
That's true. You'll do anything.
I played football. Oh, good.
You'll okay. Do anything for a joke.
That's right.
So
when we're talking joke too low that I won't go.
Starting to rap again.
I wasn't even trying to.
It's in your blood now.
That's right.
So the civil cases, like the one we just kind of discussed, that would be like a negligence cause of action. Civil cases are not just negligence. There's other kinds too, like any kind of contractual disputes. Like if you didn't pay like a credit card bill or something like that, then the credit card company might sue you for to get that money back and things like that. That would be an example of a civil
case. Or something to do with property, like you say somebody built a wall that went over your property or something like that.
So exactly.
You would file a civil case.
Right.
All right. Well, here's something that's confusing to me. And you brought it up earlier, the O.J. Simpson case.
Mm-hmm.
All right, O.J. Simpson was tried in a criminal court and was acquitted. Then turned around and he was sued by the Goldman family, I guess it was. Maybe the Brown family too, I'm not sure. But he was sued for the exact same thing that he had just been acquitted of. And they found him, I don't know, finding him guilty, but they found him liable. He was ordered to pay so many millions of dollars for the death of the two people, and yet he had been acquitted of the murder. It seems to me somebody got it wrong. How can we have two different systems try the same thing and come up with two different outcomes, and that's okay?
Well, that is basically because the criminal version of that trial, and each trial, you got to remember, it was two separate trials. So different things can happen in each trial. Some evidence might get in one case and not in another. And I actually read something that said that there were some shoes that he was, a picture of him wearing some shoes that got in the civil case that didn't get in the criminal case. That can be one thing. But the main thing is that in a criminal case, the burden of proof, and when I say burden of proof, I'm talking about like what the person who is the plaintiff or the prosecutor has to show. So in the criminal case against O.J. Simpson, he was presumed innocent until found guilty. So in the burden of proof to find him guilty was beyond a reasonable doubt. And that's a very high standard. So basically that standard is that you have beyond reasonable doubt that he did this crime. So it's a high standard. Now, in the civil case, it's a different standard. And that's one of the different rules. It's in order to prevail in a civil case, it has to be beyond a preponderance of the evidence, which is a much lower standard. Even if, in theory, if you tried the exact same case in criminal and the exact same case in civil with the same evidence, same arguments, same jurors, things like that, there could be that one little gray, this one little area in between preponderance of evidence and reasonable doubt where it might fit that category.
If you broke this down into like a measurement, 10 is absolute.
Right.
You could be in the criminal case and maybe it's 9 out of 10 the evidence weighs that he's guilty, but because it's not 10 out of 10, he gets off. Whereas in the civil case, it might be 5 out of 10 is all that you actually prove, but that's close enough to a preponderance that you get it, or 6 out of 10 if
right.
you want to use actual,
yeah, that's
actual numbers that add up.
Yeah, that's actually a very good example. It falls in that range that it's not quite enough for the criminal, but it is enough for the civil. And the other thing that I was kind of trying to talk about was that each trial can be different. I mean, you could try, if you have a criminal case and you try it, and for whatever reason it's a mistrial because the jury, it's a hung jury and they don't come to any kind of verdict, and then you try again, I mean, you can get different things. Evidence might not come in one case, but it might come in the other. And that's based on kind of the judge's decision at that time or different arguments and things like that. So,
are they both jury trials?
Well, the criminal case is always going to be a jury trial.
Right. You have a jury of your peers. But how about in a civil case? Is it always a jury trial?
No, a civil case is not always a jury trial. In your complaint, when you file a complaint to sue somebody, you usually demand a jury trial, but then you can change that to a bench trial. And a lot of times, bench trials are reserved for more kind of just technical type cases. A lot of contract disputes, pretty much plain letter law, are tried in front of just a judge. If you have a foreclosure actions, I think are always just a bench trial in front of a judge. There's never a jury for that.
So. Well, the OJ, I know the criminal trial was a jury trial. Was the civil trial a jury trial as well?
I don't know. I would assume it probably was, though.
Weren't you watching?
Those kind of cases, the negligence cases like that, are almost always tried by a jury.
Okay.
So, but it's conceivable that it could not be a jury. It could be a bench trial, but be shocked if it was not a jury trial.
Well, I guess it depends on your jury, too, huh? Because I mean, there's nothing that says that these 12 people will come up with, they could hear two different sets of 12 people. They could both hear the exact same information, and yet they both could come up with a different conclusion.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, picking a jury is a huge part of being a trial attorney and trying to get the right jurors that you think are going to help your case.
Well, they almost ran out of folks. They were down to the last one on the OJ trial. They had kicked so many out for various reasons as the trial progressed.
Well,
did you see the remake here recently, the miniseries?
I watched like one or two episodes that I need to catch up on. It was really good.
I watched the whole thing. That's where I get my information. I watch TV. I'm practically a lawyer now.
When I'm talking about picking the jury, I'm talking about what happens before the trial actually starts, and that's called voir dire. And that's where you're actually...
Voir dire?
Yeah, and that's where you're...
Wait a minute, I better write that down. What is it? Voir dire.
Yeah, that's where you're checking... You basically pick different jurors. There might be a jury pool, say 100 or 200 jurors, and you ask them questions. Some places have like little information sheets they fill out ahead of time.
They don't even see the juror sometimes, do they? Just look at their questionnaire and decide preliminarily who they want and don't want?
Well, a lot of places they order them like number 1 through 100. Mm-hmm. And then just depending on the jurisdiction, it's different in a lot of different places. But they'll call and say, okay, we want numbers 1 through 15 up in the juror's box. And so they'll fill the juror's box with the first 15. And then you go through and you question those people and talk to them. And then you have different things called peremptory strikes and strikes for cause and things like that. We're kind of getting more into like jury selection now, which could be a whole different episode. But
oh, sorry.
That's okay.
I was interested.
It's kind of interesting.
You piqued my interest, counselor.
Jury selection is actually a very interesting process. And there's actually people who are specialists in picking juries. And other attorneys will hire them on just to help pick a jury because they're so good at reading people and figuring out who's going to help you.
Could you get out of jury duty by like they put you up there, and they say, before they even say anything, you stand up and you say, hang him. Well, he's just on trial for a DUI. I don't care. Hang him.
Right. Well, a lot of times the judge, like there's a situation like that. Somebody might say, one of the typical questions is, do you understand that as this defendant sits here that he is innocent until proven guilty? And the juror is supposed to say, yes. That's because that's the basis of our legal system. But some jurors say, no, I think he's guilty.
And then what happens?
Well, then the judge a lot of times will ask the attorney, say, well, can you explain it to him? And so you have to kind of sit there and try to explain it to him and rehabilitate that juror and say, well, do you understand that in our system that it's the job of the prosecuting attorney to show that this guy committed this crime? And as he sits here right now, he's innocent. He didn't do anything. They have to prove their case. Right now, he's innocent. If they started the trial right now and didn't present any evidence, what would your verdict be?
Guilty.
Yeah, say guilty. It's like, okay, Your Honor, I move we strike this juror because he's an idiot or something like that. That's part of jury selection. So
I've just heard all these horror stories about people being stuck on a jury. So I'm just trying to figure out my story if I ever have to go.
Yeah, I wouldn't go down that road.
Hang him. He's guilty.
Low Country Tom's known as a hanging juror.
Sir, this is a civil case. They'll just be hang him. I don't care.
Well, to get back to the civil cases and what we were kind of talking about, the different kinds of cases with regards to debts and things like that. If you are defaulting on a loan or a credit card debt and things like that, and you get sued, there's actually not any criminal penalty or not any kind of jail time that is associated with that. In the U.S., we don't have that, and that was called a debtor's prison. And actually, we did have that up until the mid-1800s. But now, if you don't pay a bill or something like that, there's no risk of you going to jail just on that non-payment.
That's what happened to Scrooge.
Yeah.
They threw his father in prison when he was, debtor's prison, when he was a young boy. And he swore that he would never, never be poor. And that's why he became the way he was. And later on, he got haunted because of that. You ever seen that story? You heard of that?
Scrooge?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen Scrooge.
Okay. I just want to make sure I wasn't talking about something you didn't know about.
You played that, didn't you? Didn't you play a character in that?
I did.
Which character did you play?
Scrooge.
No wonder. I saw you like slip into character.
Well, I've actually been in several different versions of it. I've played Scrooge and I've played Bob Cratchit.
Bob Cratchit, yeah.
Yeah. And Ghost of Christmas Present, so.
Yeah.
I got that one pretty much covered.
Yeah, you went into his whole backstory.
Yeah, that's right.
It's pretty deep. So, but yeah, the debtor's prison was basically phased out of the United States in the mid-1800s.
And they had them in United... I thought that was just in England. They had debtor's prisons here?
Yeah, well, all of our law basically comes from England. And it's common.
Well, that's true.
It's so a common law system. Their
prisons over here.
Yeah. Our early cases, a lot of times, are brought from England. There's a lot of similarities between that. But not.
So it was against the law to be poor, basically.
Yeah, to a certain degree. Well, it's against the law to take on a debt and then not pay it. Which, if you think about it, is kind of counterintuitive. If somebody owes you money and you want them to pay you that money to make you whole, they're not going to be able to work if they're in jail. So why would you do that?
Well, you're just being malicious at that point.
Yeah, I think so.
It's a jerk move.
Yeah. So, but yeah, we don't have anything as debtors' prisons anymore. One trick that I have seen some attorneys who represent credit card companies and things like that do is they will get a judgment against you for a debt. Say like you owe XYZ credit card company $5,000 and, you know, you don't have any defense for it. You say, I charged that. I bought that waterbed. I bought that whatever.
Waterbed? Yeah. What year is this?
So it
was a groovy waterbed, too.
That was my lava lamp. Yeah, I bought that. So you bought those things, and you don't really have a defense, and you say, yeah. I
had been smoking a doobie.
Yeah.
That's why I bought it.
I was playing Bob Marley in this Scrooge play, and I was trying to get into character.
Bob Cratchit. I misspoke.
Oh, my bad.
I'm usually at least half right. I got the Bob part right.
You did.
Bob the tomato.
The once the person admits the debt and they get a judgment against them, then at that point, the attorney will try to collect on that judgment and try to do some discovery to find out if you do have any assets where you can pay for this judgment that's now against you. And they'll send you discovery asking you these questions and things like that and trying to take your deposition and whatnot. Now, if you just ignore that and you don't pay attention to this judgment or this discovery in aid of execution, then at that point, they can get a contempt order against you for disregarding the judge. So basically, they go to the judge and say, hey, we sent this discovery to him. We're entitled to it. He just refused to answer it. The judge will say, you know, answer it. If you still don't answer it, at that point you're in contempt. The judge can actually put you in jail, but it's actually not for the debt, but it's not for responding to the discovery about the debt. So there's kind of a trick about that. And it's really, I've never actually seen somebody put into jail for it, but it's actually a threat that could possibly get you in jail if you just completely ignore it. So,
well, that sounds like something one of those collection companies would say that calls you up to try to collect the debt.
Yeah.
They're not very nice people sometimes.
No. And a lot of it's actually against the law, I believe, under the Fair Credit Reporting Act for them to threaten you with jail time for not paying a debt.
Well, it's not legal for them to threaten you if you're the debt collector either, though, because there was a time when I worked as a collection manager at a bank, and I called a guy up and I said, Mr. John Doe, whatever his name was, you're past due on your payments. I'm going to have to come get your car. And he said, you come get my car and I'm going to shoot you. And I said, well, if you shoot me, you're going to have a lot worse problems than a past due bill.
What did he say to that?
Well, it didn't seem to deter him any. Well,
there's not reason.
I decided I didn't really want that car that bad. They didn't pay me that much, so.
Yes.
I didn't get paid by the car. I got paid the same whether I got it or not. So I can say, yeah, that one's cool. We'll let it ride a little longer.
Yeah, he said he's going to checks in the mail.
That's, yeah. It's
yeah, so there's no such thing as debtor's prison. That's kind of been done away with, and we don't do that anymore. I think in certain places, though, there still are debtor's prisons and things like that. I know for a fact.
In America?
Well, no, not in America, like overseas. I've read some stories about like United Arab Emirates, like Abu Dhabi. There were some Americans that were living there, and they had taken out mortgages on these like huge houses and whatnot, and then didn't pay the mortgage on it, and they actually got thrown in jail for not paying their mortgages there.
I can't imagine that. I wasn't aware they still had those kind of things. Now, let's get back to criminal law. That's the stuff that people are more familiar with than the civil law, because you know, all your TV shows are based on criminal law. They don't show people going around suing each other and dun dun dun. Now we've got to go get them. They didn't pay their bill. So, you know, we want to get the criminals off the street. You know, Law and Order, Hill Street Blues, NYPD Blue. That, you know, Castle, all the good ones.
Law and Order, Special Contracts Division.
No, that's not exciting. You don't ever see things about that.
They wrote that clause in negligence.
Commerce Clause has been roaming the street again. Get it back in there. The North Pole has bills to pay.
Civil law is, you're right. Civil law is not as kind of fascinating as criminal law. And criminal law does.
Yeah, they don't put it on TV. If it's not on TV, it's not worth that much talking about. We got to go back to the criminal stuff.
They put a lot of stuff on TV. It's not worth talking about. But that's a different podcast for a different day. The criminal law, though, there's not always going to be victims in a criminal law case. Like a lot of times when we think about it, we're thinking about like so-and-so was murdered or so-and-so was kidnapped or assaulted or things like that. And then you have a victim. Or you might have like the family of the victim and things like that. There's certain kinds of cases where there's not actually a victim.
A victimless crime.
Well, there's no such thing as a victimless crime. Because
there is.
Say if like somebody goes out and they poach a deer and they shoot a deer out of season, which is illegal because it's against the law. And those laws exist because during certain times of the year, deer are breeding and they need to breed to continue breeding.
Are we really going to talk about deer breeding?
I'm just trying to. You know how hard it is to come up with these legal examples?
You got
to
get examples ahead of time. You can't get into deer breeding. I'm not going to talk about that. I got enough deer in my backyard. I don't need more of them if they're out there breeding.
Well, I did talk about the deer and the jump in the pool.
Well, I know. Well, you got deer on the brain?
Oh, dear. So, well, anyway, my example is there are certain kinds of crimes where there's not going to be a victim, but the crime itself is against the law because there's some sort of underlying public policy that makes it a crime. And so basically the victim of that crime is everyone who else is in that jurisdiction. So it's not a victimless crime. There are victims. It's just there's not one that's going to be able to like take the stand and say, this guy's a bad guy or something like that.
So they're representing everyone that was hurt by this, whether they knew it or not.
Right. And that's actually the theory of all criminal law, because certain things that you do are so egregious that they've been codified as something that requires criminal punishment or criminal sanctions for it. That's why we have criminal law, because it's something that we've deemed that is something that society can't have. So
as we broke the golden rule.
Yes. You were not nice to the deer. Out of season.
I'm not going back to the deer breeding example. Move on, counselor.
So, as I was saying, the burden of proof in criminal cases, and this is kind of interesting, burden of proof, it comes from a Latin term, onus probandi.
Onus probandi?
Yeah.
Is that burden of proof?
That's burden of proof in Latin.
Onus probandi.
Yeah. And so the burden of proof is higher in the criminal cases because the penalty of removing your civil liberties, generally, of being incarcerated, it needs to be higher. So you don't want to have somebody, you want to make sure it's beyond a reasonable doubt that somebody did a crime before you throw them in jail for doing that crime. So that's why we have the higher standard for criminal.
Well, that's true. You could argue that one both ways. Is it better to have someone that's innocent not go to jail or someone that's guilty go free?
I think it's better to...
It's a conundrum.
Well, no.
Do you know what a conundrum is?
I do.
Okay.
It's like a Hobson's choice.
I was going to give you a legal brief there.
It's not time for legal briefs yet. We're not quite there yet.
All right.
So the reason that the burden of proof is higher in criminal cases is because you're taking away that person's civil liberties, that they're going to be incarcerated for it. And that's why you want to have that standard higher. And I think it's better to have a higher standard.
Well, I mean, if you're going to put somebody in jail, then yes, you should be able to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that they did what they did. I guess some of us get upset sometimes when there's technicalities involved and you know the person's guilty and then they go free anyway because of some technicality where someone filed properly or they didn't read them their rights properly or whatever it is that comes along and does that. And I don't know if that happens in real life, but it happens on TV a lot.
It does happen in real life, and it's important that it happens in real life because those rules and those technicalities that might seem like they're kind of like, oh, well, they didn't do this one little thing. We have those in place for a reason, and that's to protect the innocent because we want to make sure all these different things happen. They might seem silly. They might seem trite, but they have to be in place because they actually protect innocent people from being convicted of a crime. So winning on a technicality, even if the person's guilty, it serves a grander purpose because you're protecting the system rather than just that person. So it's more of a kind of a grander scheme of things you got to think about.
That's a bitter pill to swallow.
It is. But if you're going to represent criminal defendants, it's something you got to realize that you're going to have guilty people who are your clients that you have to try to represent as best you can.
I couldn't be a lawyer. I'd lean over to the other lawyer, the prosecutor. Is that what you call the other lawyer?
If it's a criminal case, yeah.
If it's a criminal case, yeah. I'd lean over and I'd say, he did it. Go ahead and get him. He did it. Well, and they'd say, you're not allowed to say that. And I'd say, I know, but he did it. I can't help it.
Ask him to try the glove on.
No, that was a bad move. That didn't work at all.
Well, that's one thing. You never want to try something in court for the first time. That's always a bad idea.
Yeah, I think a lot of people learn that from that OJ trial.
Yeah.
If the glove don't fit, you must acquit. And they did.
Yeah.
It didn't fit, and they did acquit.
Johnny Cochran was good with coming up with those different kinds of like catchphrases and almost like rap like you.
Yeah, almost. He's almost got my fresh flow.
So one interesting thing that was brought up on our Facebook page, and it was actually by our relative, Dane Meadows, and it was about the...
Bubba Dane.
Stories
we could tell about him, but they would not be appropriate for this.
We're gonna have to edit out the Bubba Dane part. He might not like that so much.
Why?
Well, I don't know.
He'll always be little Bubba Dane.
I know, little Bubba D.
But he put that on there about this area in, is it Yellowstone National Park?
Yes.
That is supposedly this guy did this investigative work, and it's in an area where you can kill somebody and get away with it.
Right.
And it's because of the way that there's like four states that meet there and they gave it its own zoning where it's in another state, but you're actually in a different state and it's a federal crime. And so because of all these loopholes, you could supposedly kill somebody there and walk away scot-free because they couldn't try you for it.
Right. And one of the reasons, if I remember the way the article read, was that is because they couldn't actually get a jury there to actually try you because you're entitled to a jury by your peers and there's nobody that lives there. So that there's nobody they can impanel a jury to actually try you for a murder case. So the article said that, you know, if you committed a misdemeanor or something like that didn't require a jury, then you could still be tried for it. But something egregious like a murder, then they couldn't try you.
And this guy did all this research and got law professors involved and everything. And they basically said, yes, what he's saying is true. And so he took it to his congressman or something like that and said, you've got to close this loophole. Look what I've discovered. They're like, that's not really important. We don't care too much about that. And they haven't done a thing about it.
Right. They want to argue about other stuff.
They said that the main thing was it would still be a deterrent is even if they supposedly you could get away with that criminally, you could still be sued by the people like the survivors as a civil suit.
Right. And that, I think that turned on the fact that you could, that was not necessary to have a jury trial, that you could just be tried because there still was jurisdictional areas there.
Right.
But that didn't require a jury. So that's one of those things that's kind of interesting. And it illustrates the difference between criminal and civil and kind of tied in with this episode. It's kind of a timely post by Bubba Dane.
And what did they call that area?
The article called the Zone of Death.
Zone of Death. So if anybody that you thought was an enemy ever invites you to go with them on a trip to Yellowstone Park and visit the Zone of Death, I'd pat them down real good before I go there because you might not come back out. They might be testing the theory.
They might push you off a cliff or something like that. I think there's actually a story about somebody in a national park that pushed somebody off a cliff.
Oh, there's several of those, but those are usually husbands and wives, one or the other, boyfriends and girlfriends, something like that.
I've always heard you're more likely to get murdered by somebody you know.
Well, that's who the police always look at first on TV. Whenever a wife's dead, they go get the husband or the boyfriend. And when the husband's dead, they go get the wife or the girlfriend, or both, if they happen to have both. That's a pretty good reason why you might be dead. If you got both, that's grounds for action.
Yeah. Bring your wife. Bring your girlfriend. Bring them both.
Nah, I don't suggest that.
How about if anybody invites you to the Zone of Death, you just don't go?
Yeah, that's not a good thing.
That should be a bright line rule. No camping trips into the Zone of Death.
You know, a little bit of logic. You receive an invitation in the mail. So-and-so's having their birthday at the Zone of Death. Please join them.
Yeah. Or if it's like some sort of mansion that's in some place where it always thunderstorms and it's always dark and the bridge gets splashed out and then there's landlines and telephone lines. Maybe don't go there either.
But you wouldn't know that till after you got there.
Maybe turn around. I don't know. whenever the opening scene, whenever you first pull up and you see that first like, and the
silhouette. Was that sound again? That was pretty good.
I think I replicated it.
I think you did too.
So anyway, if you see that,
I'm not saying it sounded like anything, but you did replicate the same sound twice.
It's supposed to be a clap of thunder that.
There's a clap of thunder. All right, now suppose that you couldn't afford a lawyer. They'll give you a court-appointed lawyer then, right?
Yeah, our namesake. You get a court-appointed lawyer, and that's for, it depends on jurisdictions, but generally you don't get court-appointed lawyers for civil cases. It's only for criminal.
All right, but if you were a court-appointed lawyer, and you're in the middle of a trial, and you had to go to the bathroom, while you're in there, does that mean you're performing your civic duty?
That would definitely be an example of civic duty.
Duty.
All right. I think that brings us to our favorite part of the episode.
Legal briefs. Briefs.
All right. So for those of you that don't know, legal briefs is the part of the podcast where I recap some different terms and things we discussed during the podcast and see if Tommy can define what they are.
Paying attention.
Paying attention. It's almost a little pop quiz, but it's not really a pop quiz because it comes at the end of every episode.
Yes, so I'm expecting it, and I still miss them. I have to go home and burn on that all night.
All right, so the first term is, and this is actually a little bit different. It's going to be rules of procedure.
Rules of procedure.
Now, there's different kinds of rules of procedure, so what are they?
You know, you've been getting trickier with these things lately by saying something that we didn't discuss and then expecting me to know the answer. I'm getting too good, aren't I? That's what it is. You like to try to fail me. I had teachers in school like that. They thought they were doing their job if you did bad on tests. And I say, if I do bad on tests, it's the teacher's fault. He didn't teach me that stuff.
You got to remember, I'm a lawyer and a dude.
I'm just a dude.
I know.
Give me a break. All right, what's the word again?
Rules of procedure. So there's two different kinds.
Rules of Engagement was a TV show that was pretty good. I like that.
Yeah.
But I guess that has nothing to do with it.
No.
Rules of procedure. Well, is that the difference between either a criminal case or a civil case?
It is, yeah.
Well, there you go.
in criminal cases, you follow the criminal rules of civil or criminal rules of procedure, and then in civil cases, you follow the civil rules of procedure. So there's two different kinds of rules of procedure, basically.
And do you have to be civil when you're trying a civil case?
It's frowned upon if you're not.
That's good.
Although I have seen some uncivil attorneys in civil cases.
Well, they should be kicked right out. They say, this is a civil case. You have not complied.
Yeah, some attorneys like to put on the dog and pony show for their client to make them think that
they allow animals in the courtroom? I don't understand that.
Only in kangaroo courts.
Ha, ha.
Zing.
Yeah, that's only in Australia, isn't it?
So, okay, burden of proof. Again, there's two different burdens of proof.
Burden of proof, in a criminal case, it has to be the beyond a reasonable doubt.
Right.
And in a civil case, it's a preponderance of evidence.
Exactly. That's right.
Aha. Exactly.
You nailed that one.
I nailed it. Hung you up.
Yeah.
Didn't expect that, did you?
You did hang me up. Hung jury.
A hung jury. I know what I want to say, but I'm going to avoid it. It's a jury of my peers. No. Sorry, it was just laying there. That said, they couldn't make a decision. That's supposed to be unanimous, I guess. And then when they can't reach a unanimous decision, that means they're hung.
Exactly. And it results in a mistrial.
Of course it's exactly. It's what I said.
It results in a mistrial. Oh, this might be my favorite legal brief that we've done. It's definitely the one that you've laughed the hardest and turned the reddest.
I couldn't help it. I tried to resist it, but it was just laying there. I had to go for it.
Pick the low-lying fruit.
Yeah. Fruit of the looms. Legal briefs.
Legal briefs. All right. Well, that's going to do it for this episode.
That's it. I got 100.
You did. 100%.
You didn't even have a bonus question. You should have asked me that onus prono or whatever it was. I was ready for that.
Onus probandi.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't have a bonus question. I could try to think of one.
Or that Devon thing about the jury selection.
Oh, yeah.
That questionnaire that they give everybody to fill out there for the question. I was taking notes. I was paying attention.
Yeah, you thought it was going to be tricky and throw in these different terms.
Yeah, yeah. I was weighing that all in there.
What is the process of jury selection called then? You started to say it.
I'm stumped now.
Voir dire.
What?
Voir dire.
Voir dire.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, because that's what we got on that deer thing.
Yeah.
At least they're not breeding.
Nothing worse than breeding deer.
Well, never mind. That was extra credit. I didn't need it anyway. I already got 100.
Yeah, always going above and beyond the call of duty.
That's me. Above and beyond the call of duty.
Yeah, I think we set a new record for duty jokes.
Civic duty. Call of duty.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Court Appointed.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well then, not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out, though, right?
Usually.
Good.
This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Thanks for listening.